In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I don't know about you. We all come to this experience of celebrating All Saints Day and All Souls Day with different sorts of backgrounds and attentionality. For some, it means a Halloween and sort of a sugar high, you know, that night before All Saints Day, and everybody dresses up, and it's become like, I think it's like the second most popular celebration after Christmas in our sort of civil calendar. For others, All Saints Day, I remember as a young child, was a high holy day in the church, and everybody had to go to Mass, and we all did that and celebrated and sort of remembered our ancestors and sang songs like we sang at our opening song, verse after verse after verse, because it has to talk about connecting, you know, the people in on earth and the people in heaven, and talk about war stories and all those kinds of things. Some of that stuff gets to me, not in a good way. And so we all have those kinds of histories. And then comes All Souls Day. And I don't know about you all, but I grew up a little Catholic boy, and I remember the nuns sort of carting us all en masse, class by class, into church, and we would come in and get some holy water, and then we'd pray six Our Fathers, Hail Marys, and Glory Bees, and a soul would pop out of purgatory and go into heaven, and then we had to go out of the church and go around and come in a different door, because you couldn't do two at a time. You had to pop them out one by one. And so, at the risk of sounding irreverent, that's what I remember. It's not about the nuns, it's about me. And we all sort of have this history of what does this all mean? And it begs the question, why are we here? Why are we lighting candles to remember our loved ones from this, who have been part of the history and the fiber of this congregation, or are related to individuals in the congregation and a part of their family or their friends? Many of you know I served early on in my my ministry as a missionary, a foreign missionary. So I was a missionary in the Philippines for several years, and I went over there immediately after I had finished my theological studies. And because I was sort of a slow learner, I actually started theology, then I quit, and I ran a youth center, drop-in center for troubled kids for 3 years. I started it and ran it, and then came back to the seminary, finished up, so it took me 10 years to finish the seminary that other people did in four. So I was finished, and I had finished also a degree in counseling. So I'd asked to go to the Philippines as a foreign missionary. I really wanted to spend the rest of my life as a foreign missionary. I felt like that was my call. My superiors in the Franciscan order didn't feel that way, but I did. So they won, actually. That's why I'm here. part of it. So I went to the Philippines, and I loved it there. And I studied Waray Waray. Some of you, I'm sure, studied that in high school. Studied Waray Waray, the language, and got to be, you know, relatively fluent in Waray Waray, and did some sacraments. I was ordained over there in Waray Waray. And one of the things that struck me and sort of made a theological a dent in my theology, as it were, that I had spent those many years studying, was when All Souls Day, All Saints Day and All Souls Day came. Because I remember, you know, my history was what I just described with the nuns and sort of the solemn experience of connecting in a sort of a theological, sort of an ethereal, mystical, mysterious way to the people who have died and gone before us. So I get to the Philippines, and my first All Saints Day, All Souls Day was in Manila. And our friary was on the hill inside Manila. It was a very, very, very old building. And next to it was a huge cemetery. It was called San Francisco del Monte. So next to it was this huge cemetery. And maybe a week or two before All Saints Day, they started bringing, like, merry-go-rounds and Ferris wheels and all kinds of barbecue stuff and into the cemetery. And I, like a fool, was like, what is going on? Did they sell the property to make it into an amusement park or what? And it was, I came to learn, because I was culturally ignorant about the life of the Filipino community, that they were getting ready to celebrate All Saints and All Souls Day. And that for some time before the feast and on the feast and after the feast, it was all about pitching a tent and camping out and partying down and sometimes getting blown away drunk with your ancestors in the cemetery, which was, for me, it just felt like a ritual desecration of anything that we would do here. But it was so striking to me that that was just part of their fiber. It wasn't about sitting back and in church and sort of having these memories, which happen, of course, in our brain. Our hippocampus makes a memory and plants it, and we're able to retrieve it. And when you get Alzheimer's, you can't retrieve it anymore. And, you know, and so they have long-term, you can't make it. You can retrieve it with Alzheimer's. I shouldn't, you know what I mean. Anyway, it happens up here in our brain. Over there, I'm not sure anybody was thinking a whole lot about their ancestors the way we would and praying for them. It was about being present to them. It was about somehow experiencing their presence in the here and the now in a very real way. It was about literally partying with them, sort of making them part of the here and now. Let's have a beer on Uncle Jim's tombstone kind of experience. What really blew me away is when I had a habit on and walked into the cemetery and they handed me a squirt gun full of holy water. And I was like, what's that for? And they said, that's for blessing the four-story tombs up there. You have to get the holy water to the tomb. And if it's the third or fourth story up, it's higher. So literally, the people would grab you, oh, Father Bob, can you come and bless Aunt Sally's tomb? And it's on the fourth story, and you'd squirt it with holy water and say a prayer. And so it was a really very different feel from anything that I had ever done before. But it was so real. And what it did for me was a sort of a spiritual or internal transformation that connected very much to what we do at this table every Sunday morning. That we can come here and celebrate around the table, and we can tell stories about Jesus, and we can remember him in our brains because we know all the stories, right? And we read them over and over, and some of them have them memorized, and then some of us pride ourselves in being able to quote them to other people and get a brownie point. But no, what we do around the table is some of that, and that's good, but much more profoundly, we sort of pitch our tent with a Jesus who is present to us, who lives among us because we believe, and we're told in those very readings that we read this morning, that life and death as we know it, and oftentimes define it, has to do with the body. But in the communion of saints, to which we are called in baptism, to which we belong through baptism, in the communion of saints, it is learning how to live in the love of God, which is absolutely timeless. Ray asked me, he's not here today, I guess. He asked me last week, I just can't get into this thing about Jesus. I can get into the thing about Jesus, God being eternal, going on forever, but I can't understand how he was never created. And I said, well, welcome aboard, Ray, because none of us can. But it's that point. It is that mystery of a God who is love, who has pitched his tent, as the second reading said, who has pitched his tent so that God can live among us in Jesus, whose Spirit is given, not that we can recall sort of a historical experiences that we've had or the stories that we tell, but a God who has pitched God's tent through Jesus to be among us and to live among us much more in the spirit of the carnival atmosphere at the cemetery. That sense of being alive. And that's what we do at the table every Sunday. It's not about telling stories and magic words. It is about Jesus coming to pitch Jesus' tent among us again in our time, in the here and in the now. And it is connecting that, what we know as our time, with that eternity. Who is God and who is love? And it's in that spirit that we remember these folks. Not so that we can just, you know, say a name and maybe tell a few stories about our loved ones, but that we claim the love that was and is ours with them through the work of God in Jesus. And that is somehow eternity coming into union with what we know as our time. Time and space. Mystery somehow overtaking us, which is exactly what we do with bread and wine and the Word every Sunday morning. And so it's an incredible honor to be able to celebrate together. In reality, not just the lives, the mortal lives of these individuals, but the very fact that they were created at the hands of a loving God to be with that loving God through all eternity and forever. To live in that love that gives us hope. It translates the experience of mortal loss into hope and glory. Just as we gather at this table of Jesus, his own death and resurrection translates our mortal lives into eternity, into connectedness, ultimate and absolute connectedness to Jesus through forgiveness of sin and the power of the relationship that we have been brought into through baptism. And so it's in that spirit, sort of a theological, what I present, hodgepodge, you know, of what I used to do as a little seventh grader at Our Lady of Grace School, sort of connected what I did at the San Francisco del Monte Cemetery when I rode the Ferris wheel and used the squirt gun to bless tombs. There's a funny kind of mystery that we celebrate. And that's who we are. A God who through Jesus can walk up to a tomb and connect heaven and earth, life and death, and make that one. And remember when Jesus did that, what did he do first? He prayed to the Father. And then he said, "And Father, I'm not doing this for my sake because I know what's going on here. I'm doing it so that these guys will understand." And that's what we're called upon to do, because we are those guys.